All right, and I think we're live, so we're going to go ahead and proceed as if we are. Welcome to the BrianMadden.com podcast, Microsoft Ignite edition. This is Gabe Knuth in Omaha, Nebraska, and joining me, we have Jack Madden.
Hello, I'm here on the line.
And we have, we actually have a person on the line. That person is Tim Mangan, who we couldn't get to his Skype to work, so we're just calling Tim.
Hey, guys.
All right, we can hear you. And then we also have Benny Trish, who is our man on the scene at Microsoft Ignite.
Hello, everybody. Currently sitting in the speaker prep room together with like 60 other speakers. And it's a great place to be.
So the reason that we wanted to have this, even though Jack and I aren't at Ignite, is, we knew Benny was on the scene, and there's been some other stuff going on with Microsoft, as it pertains to AppV and Windows 10, so we wanted to have Tim on as well, because we knew even though that Tim wasn't there, he would still be paying attention from afar. And so Ignite just, it's always the bad time of year for Jack and I. And so we opted to not go this year, and so maybe it. By the sounds of it, we may have to add Ignite to our list of conferences that we attend. Jack, you've actually spent more time watching this with than I have. What's on your mind?
For me, what's on my mind is probably all the identity management based stuff. I wrote a post this morning today, just recommending two of the top sessions that I thought. One was Brad Anderson's session going over all the Azure AD and Microsoft Security Intelligence Graphs type stuff. I was having a conversation with Brian last night. I'm saying to him, Brian has been out of BrianMadden.com for 2 months now, but I said to him, go watch this session. For the last 5 years that I've been writing at BrianMadden.com, this is some of the most interesting stuff that I've ever seen as it pertains to, all the years that we've been talking about mobility and consumerization and SaaS apps and bringing all that together. So that's one part, and we can dive into the details of that in a minute. The other session that I recommended was Satya Nadella's session on the innovation keynote, which was like 4 o'clock Eastern time Monday afternoon. And that was where he's spent the day talking about all of Microsoft's artificial intelligence efforts, which is some seriously cool stuff. Now, I imagine also what Benny and Tim were paying attention to is probably some of that, but probably also quite a few other things too. So why don't you guys go ahead?
Well, I've been digging in. I did a session there at Bry Forum on some of the new security stuff that's in the Windows 10 anniversary update, and been watching some of the sessions there at Ignite, which are sort of the follow-up and kind of providing a little more detail on some of those things that are in there. I'm looking forward to an AppV UEV session, but unfortunately it hasn't happened yet. I think it's happening right about now. But I'll have to catch up with that one a little bit later on.
So I noticed some of that there has been some talk to, there was a session about enterprise state roaming and how that's going. I don't want to say going to replace roaming profiles, but it was compared to roaming profiles. and then when you look at it, there are some interesting elements of that. And so I don't know if any of you have paid attention to that as well in terms of how that can relate to really all these different things. So Jack, there's been talk. So there's all this identity stuff, and then that kind of can roll into the conversation about how we can use this one common identity to so that our users authenticate differently, and then we can manage their desktops and the users in a more EMM sort of manner. And then we're talking about this enterprise state roaming that can replace roaming profiles by having the user settings follow them. All of this is kind of setting up that next level of Windows management. But what I'm not seeing yet is a way to actually get there. There's no migration path. It's either you do this or you use or you do this other new thing. And in the case of enterprise state roaming, this is only for universal apps. It's not for traditional Windows apps, which I still feel like are really prevalent out there. And so, yeah, if you're the most front-running operation in the world and you're using all the most modern stuff and you just do whatever Microsoft says at the drop of a hat, you know, then you can probably have some success with that. But if you're not completely all in, bought on the latest, greatest stuff from Microsoft, you know, it's going to be a while before you dive into this. So I don't know if we want to get into that now, but that's kind of what I've been, that's the news that I've been seeing out of there that has been interesting to me.
Maybe this is something that I can comment on, because when you look at the keynote, you find out that primarily Satya and Scott Guthrie and all of the others who did demos, they were talking primarily about the cloud. So the cloud story is very, very important to Microsoft. So they want to make sure that people understand that Azure plus Azure Stack is going to be pretty much like the operating system, like a distributed operating system of the future. And it's, in a sense, it is different to the Windows Server system that we know today. That makes it very interesting. But it also is kind of disruptive, because most of the IT pros that I'm talking to, they're kind of confused, because they still have to live in the traditional world, like you said earlier. So we estimate that there are between 5 and 8 million Windows applications out there, and many of them are line of business applications. Now, you cannot get rid of them overnight or replace them by any other application style or type. So long term, I'm sure that we will see web native applications and mobile applications being the dominating application type. But this is not happening today. Now, you look at all the announcements like containers, and I looked at it a little bit more deeper, and I found out it's primarily around Linux. And it's not about applications that users know today. It's rather it's web applications, and today they are developed for the Linux platform, and then they are containerized. Now Microsoft is working like crazy to make the same happening for Windows, and then being able to use Docker containers on Windows as well, and that allows you to containerize web applications. And I would refer to that, it's like AppV for web apps. But it's going to take a while until, like I said, you have these traditional Windows applications replaced by web applications, because today's Windows applications are so feature-rich when it comes to graphics formats that are being used and to communication mechanisms that are being used underneath. So to me, Windows, as it stands today, is a runtime platform. So nobody talks about the desktop anymore. So when you said it's about profile and roaming, that is not the topic here, not at all. Microsoft is talking about the new stuff that they want to make happen, and Azure is the thing. I mean, and it's not only in the cloud, it's also on-prem with Azure Stack. There are like 12 or 15 different sessions here, breakout sessions, 75 minutes, all of them covering different aspects of Azure Stack, which is in Technology Preview 2 now. So it's not a final product yet, but it consumes a substantial time here in the breakout sessions. So this is where Microsoft wants to go. This is clearly where Microsoft wants to go. And anything else pretty much is legacy. They never call it legacy, but it clearly feels like that. I mean,
Microsoft Ignite 2016 is like VMworld 2009.
Yeah. I would agree. And that makes it really, really interesting, because everybody is looking around and trying to figure out, oh, I have these customers, and oh, I don't think if they understand what's going on here, so what am I going to do with all the information that I'm collecting? How am I going to tell my boss? So this is interesting. And it's more and more about DevOps. So if you are not into coding, if you are not an IT pro who is willing to open a Visual Studio, oh my God, you're completely lost.
Yeah, I was going to say, I noticed a very subtle difference in some of the sessions that I was looking at in how Microsoft is talking about legacy applications. You know, for a while it's been, you know, Apex is the future. You know, this is a containerized thing that I mean, ultimately is using a little bit of the AppV technology, even though it's not AppV, it's using the same techniques to do that. And I'd also say, you know, containers, which also provide that same type of protection and redirection of stuff, but with the added piece of the network layering that gets put in there, and the network virtualization is a nice addition in there. But, you know, they're all doing a lot of the same thing. But what I heard out of Microsoft this time in talking to the IT pros is that, you know, Apex, we know you're not going to go and take stuff from the Microsoft store. You know, we've got this enterprise store that you can use, but in all this stuff with what used to be called Centennial, you know, now the bridges for Windows, in that stuff, they not only talked about, okay, you know, here's how you can do your bridge here and put it into the enterprise store, but there's a whole bunch of things that the enterprise store won't let you to do, and actually let Flexera on stage go and show, here's how you can do this stuff, put it into the Centennial piece, but it's the stuff that it won't allow you to go into the store, but allows a fuller set of richness of what that app is allowed to do. So you don't have to rip out a lot of code, and you can run your app as is, but still start taking advantage and moving your way over. And that was a very subtle shift to say, hey, you know, it's okay. We understand enterprises are going to continue to leverage the, you know, traditional style applications that want to integrate well together, and we're going to continue to support you.
Tim, I was going to ask you, so that Flexera term, what is Flexera?
They're a company that make the number one MSI repackaging tool. So, you know, most enterprises are taking in MSIs from the vendors or EXEs and repackaging them before they push them out to all of their desktops. And they would use a tool like that, Advanced Installer, for example, or Wix as ways to do that.
Yeah, it's been a while. So I honestly, the last time I was at Ignite, it was MMS actually, and Flexera had a pretty big presence there. So that's really interesting that they had them on stage and were showing that. I guess Tim, we don't have to keep you here if you're on the phone the whole time, but I wanted to get your thoughts here on a couple of different things. You know, now, so with at the in the box, as your Briform session was called, you know, there's that that's what we're talking about, and I think that's probably what is enabling the Centennial stuff. Is that right?
Not really. The Centennial stuff started out as at the under the covers, but they've really implemented their own piece so that as part of the technology of putting at the in the box, it leverages a few of those components. But you actually are able to run the Centennial stuff without enabling AppD at all, or without enabling the containers, which is inside of Windows 10 too.
Okay, so the Centennial stuff, I was looking for more information, for more sessions on that here. Either the search is not great or the way to sort through sessions is not great, but it seems like, yeah, kind of going on what Benny was saying, it seems like there's not a lot of EUC-focused stuff here. There's a few things about desktops, and there's a few things here and there. But
that's not completely true, because there are so many sessions here about it, but it was not the focus during the keynote. And those sessions that talk about the traditional desktop, like Windows 10, and also about remote desktop, they're packed. So people are really interested in that. And yes, they also want to learn about Azure Stack and all of these things, but they have a daily job to do. And so they want to know what's going on there. And I mean, there was the announcement of System Center, brand new System Center. that is interesting, because it represents a traditional world. On the other side, if you look at Azure Resource Management, ARM, which is also very substantial. So there are two worlds living side by side, and it's very clear where the future is. But still, Microsoft knows that they have to maintain today's world, and they're trying to bring them together over the next years. This is going to be the masterpiece that they have to deliver in the end, that they bring these two worlds together without killing each other.
Tim, from a Windows app deployment standpoint, traditional line of business app standpoint, have they done a good job of that in terms of
of what Benny was talking about?
Yeah, well, in terms of enabling Microsoft to kind of bring along the old style of traditionally managed applications, deploying them to people. I mean, this is, you know, as Benny was saying, we're moving into this cloud first focus that Microsoft has, but they're bringing along all of the traditional IT that we do today. And so from your perspective, is that have they done a decent job of that?
Oh yeah, they have. I mean, from going back to DOS, Microsoft, that's one of their real strengths, that you can upgrade the platform and keep the applications. Sure, we had a lot of hiccups that happened between XP and Vista, or as most people saw it, XP to 7. That was really, a set of things that Microsoft felt they had to change and fix to secure the platform for the future. If you look at the app compatibility between 7 and 8 and 8 and 10, there are very, very few apps that have a problem. And Microsoft is doing a really good job with that right now.
And then how about the bridge now into universal applications and Centennial? Is that a pretty good, now we're into like the second effort here. Is it shaping up well?
I'm not a huge fan of it right now. It's built on the premise that the vendors really want to get into the store. And if we're talking about business applications, going into the store isn't a big interest right now. I don't think enterprises want the apps to go there, and you're losing a lot of capabilities by going there. So it's not making a tremendous amount of sense right now. Now, in the long run, it may well, because these will be more secured apps.
It does make sense there. I keep getting the impression, though, that they're trying to make it easier. Like, we have the desktop application packager. I can't remember the name of it, but
Converter.
So you can package up your own applications to deploy them as if they were. Is universal the right word, or just deploy them through that same mechanism?
Through the FX, yeah.
Yeah.
You could get all of the, other than being able to deploy them as FXs, you could get all of those benefits by simply packaging them in AppV and have a lot less of the problems. And there's, when you want to do that conversion, you can only have one shortcut. The shortcut can't have any command line arguments to it. I had a list on the screen there at my Brightform session. It was about 20 items of things that you can't do when you try to go through the bridge.
Huh. I will try to go find that and maybe put that in the show notes here. That's interesting. They've done a great job thus far, and if they continue to do a good job, that'll be okay. But as it stands right now, the transition from traditional application deployment and where applications run, or how they're, I guess, just how they're deployed.
That's a work in progress.
Yeah, where they're at now is a work in progress, right?
Also, Gabe, remember you and I, we were looking at Microsoft's guidance on when to use traditional desktop management and when to use mobile device management style desktop management. And as a matter of fact, Microsoft is fairly conservative and realistic about their guidance. And it's the other vendors like AirWatch and VMware and Mobile Iron and some of the other EMM vendors that, for obvious reasons, are much more aggressive about the idea of, hey, let's get as many Windows devices onto MDM as possible. That's why we see efforts like VMware TrustPoint to help make that happen. But if you look back at Microsoft's recommendations, they're like, hey, your typical enterprise desktop, that's going to be the way it is. And now they have other things to help that along, such as the System Center Configuration Manager as a service, which they're pushing out every month or every couple of months, pretty often updates. For that, which that config manager as a service, I was curious, Benny or Tim, if either of you had any comments on that.
Yeah, that's a model that they want to do for all the products, all the traditional products. So this is what I learned here, that the time is over. Pretty much what they said with Windows 10, it's the last version of Windows 10, and it will constantly be updated. And that's going to happen with all the products. It's all under a change towards agile development and deploying or releasing the results of what they do behind the scenes every month or every 2 months. So this is very interesting to see that the old model is dead. And the thing is that they are trying to build a platform rather than a solution. And that pretty much reminds me of the times when Windows Server was introduced to the market, because at the time, Microsoft wasn't able to provide an end-to-end solution to their end customers. So they required partners to build those solutions. And they're coming back to this model because they kind of failed building end-to-end solutions that make their customers happy. So they thought they can take all the budget, but now they learn that if they share the budget with their partners, and it doesn't matter how large those partners are, it can be like one-man shows that build a smart little tool on top of their platform, it's beneficial for Microsoft. They start learning that. And they appreciate that now. And that's a fundamental difference to last year's Ignite, where they were trying to pitch their own solutions. And this year, it's more like, hey, look at all the partners that we have, all the ecosystem. And that also reflects what they're doing with Azure, because Azure Stack, like I said, at the beginning I thought it's not more than a management framework that you have in order to manage your on-prem environment. But now it turns out that they're trying to replicate what they learned when they built their 34 data centers globally, what they learned from that, how they can replicate it, but on the lowest scale possible. So the minimum number of machines in order to run Azure Stack on-prem is 4 physical machines with 2 CPUs each. Each CPU must have at least 8 cores, and you need to have switches. And it's like a hyper-converged rack full of hardware, including the NICs and everything. And this is the smallest atomic way how to build an Azure data center yourself. And it's managed in exactly the same way as you manage Azure. And this is what Azure Stack is all about. Azure Stack is all about. And this makes it very exciting because it goes far beyond that you just want to manage your individual server that's sitting in your data center. But they are aware that there is a transition phase where customers will have their individual servers sitting in their data centers, and they need to transition to this new model. But it's a hyper-converged model, so it will also change the profile of all the consultants that are out there. So they will not build servers from scratch. The intention is that they build one of those hyperconverged racks as the minimal solution and then scale out. This is very interesting because it changes the role description of the partner ecosystem out there in the field.
Oh, sure. Well, and I think this is the second year they've been talking about Azure Stack, and it might be even be the third. But this is you're right, Benny. This is a hyper-converged approach to a bridge to the cloud.
And so, yes, and they're working with partners because they're showing the machines from Lenovo and Dell. So they have their early adopters, and they work with them.
It'll keep companies happy that want to keep their resources on premises.
I agree. It's a challenge for those companies who want to continue delivering consulting services that in the same way as it did 5 years ago. This is not going to work for very much longer. But there are huge opportunities if you are learning how to use Resource Manager and all of that, and try to wrap your head around Azure Stack and all of those. Because all the services that are available in Azure will also be available through Azure Stack. I mean, alone the amount of different VM types that you're able to deliver through your on-prem Azure Stack instance, it's amazing. It's pretty much identical to what they have in the huge Azure cloud with thousands of physical machines. That makes it very attractive. So I agree. Microsoft is the only company right now that has a real hybrid approach where they encourage you to buy your own rack and build your own Azure cloud. And this includes also the thing that I'm interested in, the remote desktop services. I mean, you can deliver the same kind of remote desktop services from your Azure Stack instance, like locally, as you could do it potentially from Azure. So it doesn't make a difference. So now we need to work on the transition of our traditional data centers that they fit into the model of Azure Stack, because that gives you the option to move back and forth from the cloud as you want to do it. And as Jack pointed out at the beginning, identity is the most critical factor there. If they don't have the identity story complete, it will not work. It will simply not work.
So what's the have you gotten any sense of what people feel about Azure Remote App going away?
There are customers. There were conversations about that, and some early adopters, they are not happy about it. And Citrix did an entire session on what they want to do. And yes, there are some enhancements that they have. They want to put their management framework around it. They want to use machine creation services in order to be able to spin up machines much faster. So there are some good things around it. The price model is not clear yet, and the scalability is not clear yet, so it's still in its infancy. And so there were not too many customers that were using Azure Remote App on a large scale, so I believe that it will not be too disruptive. What the RDS guy said to me is that if Azure Remote App is on one side and infrastructure as a service is on the other side, what their customers wanted, what the feedback was, is that the requirements of those customers was much closer to the end of the spectrum where infrastructure as a service was, and they were not able to fulfill the requirements. So they decided they just leave this field to Citrix because they are much better in delivering the end-to-end solution than Microsoft is, and they rather concentrate on building the ultimate platform for partners to build on top.
I think it makes a lot of sense.
That makes a lot of sense suddenly, and you feel a lot of love as an RDS MVP, much more than it was previously, because they say, we need you to help us identify those cool tools and products that are out there that your customers want to use, because they want to have a full solution and we cannot deliver that. And I was like, wow, am I talking to Microsoft? You say you cannot deliver a full solution? They said, no, we are the platform provider and we need your help. Wow, this is great news.
New Microsoft, yeah.
No, it's like the old Microsoft it was like 15 years ago. It's interesting.
I guess that's true, right? Yeah, everything changed and then went back again. Interesting. Yeah, that's like I said, I think it's a good move. I think when they announced that Azure Remote App would be going away, I kind of wondered if Microsoft wouldn't go in the opposite direction and commit fully to do desktops as a service. But frankly, it just makes more sense for them to dial back and focus on just making a kick-ass platform.
Yeah. And this is what they do. All the investments that they're making is, well, create the ultimate protocol, create the, well, like shielded VMs. And then suddenly the container story resonates again because, hey, it's a runtime platform for all different kinds of applications. And they want to make it the ultimate stable and secure platform. So wonderful.
Let's talk about that because I think it was last year, Benny, where I walked up to you at Synergy or VMworld or something, and I said, "This Docker stuff, we don't care about that, right?" And maybe it wasn't Docker. It was the other thing. It was what's the small Windows? Gosh, I'm having a horrible day for remembering.
Nano server.
Nano server was the stuff that we didn't care about. Just because these weren't user-facing applications, and so two people emailed me yesterday and said, hey, did you hear this big news that Microsoft is doing, you know, putting Windows in Docker containers? And I had to kind of dial them back because I want to make sure that everybody's aware that this is not interactive Windows applications right now.
That's correct. That is correct.
You could read it like that. And I think, Tim, you mentioned before that this kind of, like, the blocks of it look a little bit like App V, except you go and you can add in, there's the networking component that the containers add in as well. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there is no UI.
Right. So we're not talking about at V, just the application containers running, and then we can deploy apps that way or anything to users. This is about small, you know, microservices that we can scale out and down, up and down as we need to.
What I learned, this is not 100% correct, because it always depends on what you regard as an end user facing application, because we think of Windows applications, and it's absolutely correct. Windows applications cannot run in Docker containers, period. But if we're talking about web-based applications, oh, absolutely, they can be end-user facing. So it's native web apps, the things that we were waiting for such a long time, and they can be containerized. So, like I said, it always depends on what you regard as an end-user facing application. So this is why
traditional line of business app, you're not going to turn around and deploy Office with this.
Oh, if Microsoft decides to develop an Office version that is completely web-based, you can put it in Docker containers. But yes, I agree. Typically, we're talking about back-end components like server components that you want to put into containers. And because you have those containerized components, you can, well, orchestrate them. And they spin up really fast, so it's very flexible, and they run on NanoServer. However, you can also activate the Hyper-V role on NanoServer. So NanoServer is going to be the platform where our terminal service, RDSH service, will be running on. So, yes, if you put those...
Are those Pico servers? If you have virtual machines on NanoServer?
No. It's the question is, how do you call it? But as a matter of fact, the guests are much larger than the host. But the host is just the hypervisor. If you want to be a little bit aggressive, you can say, oh, look at that. Now NanoServer with Hyper-V role activated looks like ESX. And it pretty much does, because you only have a command line interface.
Well, that's fine. I mean, I was explaining, somebody that was asking, because now the Docker and container news that came out of the show is that we're not just running Linux inside these containers anymore. We're running Windows inside these containers. Is that
whatever?
Is that Nano that's running inside the Windows containers, or is that something else?
No, Nano
is the hypervisor underneath everything.
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
That's the one that's making the container. So I wonder, I don't know if the Windows has a name that's actually in there, or if we're just making a container based on Nano, or, yeah. So we have to look into that. But the whole point was that somebody was asking about whether or not this means that we can do Windows applications, traditional Windows applications, with these containers now. And I'm like, nah, because whatever this is running on, you still have to have a way to remote it. You still have to have a UI,
yes,
that, you know, a GUI that people can hook into to actually display the application. And so that's called Windows Server.
To make it very clear,
yeah,
traditional Windows applications will neither run on NanoServer nor run in a Docker container.
Mm-hmm. Right. but there's like I said, I had two emails yesterday about that. That was just on the day it came out. And so I think that there's probably still going to be some confusion out there, just because this all sounds like virtualization in AppV a little bit, but it's not. And so,
And you know why it's so confusing? Because typically it's the developer jargon, because they're talking about their applications. And, well, they're talking about their web-native applications, but they don't call them web-native applications. And we talk about applications, but we talk about traditional Windows applications. So, hey, you have two people talking about applications, and they're talking about completely different things.
Yeah, and actually there's a third kind of application if you're looking at it from an infrastructure as a service standpoint, which is what like VMware was talking about with their cross-cloud infrastructure. They talk about running any application on any cloud, but when they say application, they mean you can run AirWatch servers in any cloud. Not
correct.
You can run Windows desktops with Windows applications in the cloud. And that took me longer than I thought to get to the bottom of, because I just wanted to make sure that, you know, we were representing it properly. And so, man, everybody just keeps taking our words.
yeah.
Maybe they weren't ours to begin with.
I know, but we've had them for a long time. I feel like, you know, it's a common law kind of thing now. Those are ours now.
But there are a couple of other things that are really exciting here, and one of them was like the Azure Resource Management. They're working like crazy on that, and that's going to be the next generation of management platform. And I attended a session that was entirely about the monitoring piece of all, like Azure Monitor, which allows you to monitor all the resources that are running on Azure. Now, taking Azure Stack into account, then again, you have the same thing for your on-prem solution. And wow, this is like Power BI on steroids, what they've done there. That was a very impressive session that they did. And they're open again to also allow third-party monitoring companies to hook into it, because like in the old time, everything that they do, they provide an API. In this case, it's a REST API. So they know that they cannot collect all the telemetry data that may be used, that may be required for a customer. So they allow third-party monitoring vendors to hook into that REST API and deliver their own data into the repository that can be visualized with Azure Monitor, or vice versa, that you can hook into with a third-party monitoring tool and just collect all the data that was was collected by Azure Monitor and use it for your own visualization and data analytics. I thought this was very, very exciting. And the other thing is that in many of the sessions you see in V-series VMs, these are the VMs with an NVIDIA GPU. And they're using it for all kinds of demos now because it's so powerful, because every laptop comes with a GPU. And so typically the performance when you run a traditional Windows application on a laptop is much better than when you were running it from the cloud. But now with these VMs, you beat them easily. It's amazing. And they came up with some numbers that were also very interesting. They said, how big is the market when it comes to GPUs? And for the first time, like I said, they mentioned real numbers. And they said gaming is a $20 billion market and graphics workstations is a $6.5 billion market. So this is the kind of market that they want to win with their NV series VMs. But they can also be used for deep learning, because that's another thing that you can do with GPUs. Yeah. And they refer to the automotive market, and it's an $8 billion market for the deep learning in automotive. So if you just have the combined number, it's just automotive. Imagine, yeah. So you have
and yeah.
Yeah, that's... yeah. So we're talking about only the three are like a $35 billion market, and wow, this is amazing. I mean, this is not all the money that Microsoft will make from that. It's just the general market. And I mean, in the past, I always had a gut feeling that this GPU thing is very significant, but now Microsoft comes with these numbers, and these are significant numbers. Wow.
Yeah, that's impressive. So the NV series virtual machines, are they? I'm trying to remember. I just wrote about this and it's all jumbled up in my head.
No, it's no problem. It's DDA. It's discrete device assignment. So
okay,
what
so
you
pass-through.
Do is it's pass through.
Okay.
So what they do is they pass through one GPU on a graphics card with two GPUs. They pass through one of them, or two or four. Depending on what type of VM you sign up for, to an individual VM. So I have access right now to an NV6, which is uses one GPU only. But I tell you, performance is outstanding. It's incredible. Well, you need a lot of bandwidth. We did some testing. I did testing from home with 140 milliseconds latency through the 50 megabit DSL line. And Chris Griffin, she did the same testing from Seattle with about 60 milliseconds latency. Over here, I only had like 35 milliseconds latency to the nearest data center where this VM runs. And okay, sometimes for some of the scenario, it needs like 20, 50, 60, sometimes 100 megabit. It takes all it can get. But when you do that, wow, I have a graphics laptop here with an NVIDIA graphics card in here. It easily beats my local machine, easily. So it's an amazing graphics capacity that you get from the cloud now. And like I said, this is exactly what also will be covered from Azure Stack. So you can have your GPU accelerated machines on-prem and integrate them seamlessly into your Azure architecture, which makes it very attractive.
Well, how long is it, do you think, until NVIDIA supports Hyper-V for vGPU?
Oh, you mean the real virtualization of GPUs?
Because right now we're just talking pass-through. This is dedicating GPUs to VMs.
I mean, they're also taking advantage of the NVIDIA GPUs with RemoteFX, but for this, they're using the synthetic Hyper-V driver, which cannot be fully compatible. So you're not using the NVIDIA drivers then in the VM. You're using the synthetic driver, which does an API intercept. And even this delivers amazing performance. By far not as good as when you do pass-through. So basically,
sure.
Microsoft
has
Microsoft has the two ends of the spectrum, and I agree with you. The next natural step is going to be GPU virtualization. Already, what they can do is, and they shared it with me here at the show, because I asked them, "What about RDSH servers? What if I spin up an RDSH server on top of a DDA-enabled hypervisor?" And they said, "That's no problem. You can share the GPU now among the sessions." Wow, this is interesting. We need to do some benchmarking, how good it is, because that's the first step. So they enhanced the graphics stack in a way that it's multi-user capable in order to take advantage of the pass-through GPU that's available to a VM that runs remote desktop session host. The next step is that they do a real GPU virtualization so that you can do the same thing with Windows 10 VMs. I would say that's gonna happen. That's going to happen. There's no question.
Too,
there's no doubt about it that it's going to happen. They're not speaking about it. And
I wonder if they're just waiting for 2016 to be out, and then they can announce official support for it.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
Yeah. Typically, they do this at events, though, and so I was hoping that we would see that here, and that has
not. No. Here, the big thing is the pass-through, the DDA. They want to highlight DDA. They show it all over the places, why would they take away their own thunder by making two announcements at the same time? And it's a bit more complicated.
That's the marketing guy in you, Benny.
Oh yeah, implementing vGPU is a little bit more complicated than the pass-through. The pass-through is complicated enough. The management experience sucks. Oh my God, it's a bunch of PowerShell scripts, and they are not easy to understand, and you need to find them at different places, and so there's no good documentation out there. When they build it themselves, sure, in their Azure data center, it's amazing technology. Like I said, Ruben Sprout and I, we tried to reproduce that in our labs. We failed, even though we had support from NVIDIA and Microsoft and everyone who was involved there. Wow, they need the latest and greatest servers to do that. You need the right chipset, you need the right BIOS, you need the right BIOS settings, and so on and so forth. If you have that, performance is outstanding. But it's going to take a while until all the machines are compatible with that.
Interesting. Jack, I feel like you've been very quiet and we haven't gone to you very much, but Benny has been a fountain of information. And
sorry about that.
No. This is all awesome. And Tim, I'm sorry that we kept you on. I started this with the intent that we could get you on to say what you wanted to say and then kick you off. But I picture you sitting like on the fourth tee with your phone up against your ear.
No, it's raining today.
All right. So anyway, we've got another 10 minutes or so. So you don't mind hanging out. We can let you go and you can stretch your arm out. But Jack, we talked about a little bit about the identity stuff ahead at the beginning of this podcast, I'm sure we only hit it very briefly, so I'm sure there's some stuff about that that you'd want to share. But has there been anything about EMS and Intune and any of that that stuck out this far or thus far in the show for you?
in terms of Intune, you know, one of the things that's kind of new recently is the support of Android for Work. I think overall with EMS and considering the announcements, you know, from Citrix over the last few months, is one of the things that we kind of have to figure out is the whole, just the whole relationship between Intune and Zen Mobile and how exactly all of that's going to work. And you know, how to bring everything together. And that's sort of, you know, we've been waiting to see how that's going to precisely work ever since, you know, ever since Synergy. And we've talked about that plenty before. So that's kind of a known thing. I'll go back to the big EMS and Azure AD demo that I was talking about when we opened the show. And so some of the stuff that was in this demo, or let me back up. So we did talk about the need of how our, you know, our desktop applications aren't going away. But at the same time, we still do have plenty of web applications to deal with and native mobile apps. And of course, once you get in that world and once you get more than, you know, a few important apps at your company, it becomes apparent that, you know, doing real federation from your, you know, from your on-premises AD, either through an identity as a service offering, you know, like Azure AD or, you know, a VMware Identity Manager or a Ping or an Okta, it's becoming apparent that that's pretty important. Obviously, who wants to manage all those usernames and passwords for all those apps and everything? But what's cool is, so these cloud-based identity services, such as Azure AD, is what's cool is what they can do with protecting the identity. And this is very important, as we know, because, you know, there's that Verizon data breach investigations reports that says of, you know, all these big confirmed data breaches, I think the number is 63% of them can be traced at least in part or something like that. You'll have to, you know, look it at, actually look it up. But so many of these breaches are tied to either default or stolen or weak passwords. And so, you know, nobody's going to go out and say, okay, multi-factor authentication is a silver bullet for that. But it can sure go a long way towards helping. And then when you look at the way that, you know, these systems like Azure AD can get smarter about when to use multi-factor authentication, so it can, you know, see what device you're coming in on, if you're coming from, you know, an IP address that that Microsoft knows to be bad, or, you know, all sorts of things. And then under certain conditions, it can decide to block or allow or step up authentication, ask for multi-factor authentication. Again, under certain conditions, that's called, various people call it contextual access or conditional access or adaptive authentication. And this is the stuff that, you know, with all these cloud apps and everything, that's going to go a long way towards making things more secure and having a better user experience instead of users having individual passwords for everything.
There's a lot of Azure AD stuff that I saw in the content catalog.
Yeah, you know, what's crazy impressive is when you think of when they talk about the Microsoft Intelligent Security Graph, which, you know, it's doing all sorts of, you know, that's how they identify some of the conditions that, you know, hey, maybe this means that this user or this IP address is compromised. But when they talk about all the information that they get out of Xboxes and Bing and Azure and Office 365 and, you know, all the emails that they are inspecting, that's just such a huge, wide, comprehensive amount of information that's able to filter in. I'm just thinking, where else, who else has that wide of a reach?
Yeah, I don't know. You know what they get out of my Xbox? I'm the guy that still uses Windows Media Center. That's what they get out of my Xbox, in terms of information. But other than that, But yeah, you're absolutely right, though. There's so much of this information out there, and the more that these devices can do, the more that they can capture, and that's a lot of information that they can use for behavior analysis and things like that too. So honestly, it sounds kind of Big Brother tinfoil hat, right? That they're collecting all this information, but the fact that they do collect it all, they can turn around and actually use that to our benefit as well.
Yeah, and you know, with Azure AD and with Intune and with other file sync and share, I just think back to the sessions and events that we used to give about the consumerization of IT, you know, 2011, 2010, or 2012. Sorry, I did those years out of order. All those questions, like Brian would stand up there and give those sessions, and people in the audience would either be amused or horrified or in denial. Like, we have all the answers to all of those questions now.
Wait, you want to say that Brian was right? He predicted it the right way?
Yeah, but since he's not working anymore, though, it doesn't count.
This has never happened before.
Yeah, Brian...
He's wrong, and that's what's important.
Brian brought up all of these questions about consumerization of IT and BYOD that we have to deal with. And then as I started going into EMM and identity, I did the, examining of the field that provides the answers, I guess. I'm not taking credit for, you know, obviously for the answers. I'm just saying I can point out and say, hey, look, here the answers are.
You found them, right.
Okay. So in summary, it's all Brian's fault that Jack fixed it.
I think that's what Jack's saying. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Just checking.
we're nearing the end of our hour here, and I guess we might as well just see if there's any final thoughts. I mean, I think that Benny and I talked a while about a lot of stuff as it pertains to the Docker and the Azure stack and all of those things, and so those are the key things that I was looking at during the show. And so I like Benny was saying, I mean, this is Microsoft is all cloud, but what I wasn't picking up and what Benny kind of enlightened me to is that they are also providing support for all those people that are still going to be doing things the traditional way for the foreseeable future. And so
absolutely.
That's
absolutely
that other companies have been guilty of doing the opposite of saying, well, this is the future. And if you're on Windows, you're legacy. And that's just the way it is. So it's time to get with the program.
And
so it's good to see Microsoft is still holding the hands of the people that are behind where they are.
And this is something confusing when you're only listening to a keynote, because in a keynote, they're talking about the future. They're talking about the sexy stuff, the hot stuff. And then, but when it comes down to the daily work, yeah, this is not so sexy. But then there are the breakout sessions about that. And like I said, they're packed. They're full. Yeah. People want to hear that. And Microsoft is willing to share that kind of information. And this makes it good. But you have to be sure that you end up in the right session. It's hard to fight those sessions. Sometimes I miss sessions because, Gabe, like you said, search is not always good. sometimes...
I the topic list, and even the topic list was sort of leaving some things to be desired. There was nothing overtly about EUC anymore. There was stuff about desktops.
True.
And if you clicked on desktops, you got 30 sessions. And one or two of those was about something. But, this was just
correct.
Not going to be... It wasn't what I thought it would be, or what I was looking for, I guess. I'm not surprised.
Go ahead. You know, one of the things that fit into this, we kind of slipped right by it earlier, was the whole idea of Windows as a service and, you know, Microsoft delivering all these things as services and the enterprises, quite frankly, as I see it, they're just not ready to think in that mindset. You know, as I talk to the folks that are looking at deploying Windows 10, you know, they're thinking, oh, I need to be on LTSB because I can't handle the change at that pace. And I don't trust Microsoft at that pace. And, you know, we're seeing the same thing with the Citrix releases where they're coming out, you know, once a quarter, basically. And companies are having a real hard time in grasping that. I mean, ultimately, I think it's right. You need to get in a mode of taking these things as services and trusting your platform partners to do all the right things for you and spend your time on doing more productive stuff. But I think it's going to be really hard for the enterprises to change that mindset in the short run.
Well, and like you just said, Tim, you're talking to people that are just now thinking about deploying Windows 10. And so, you know, these are people that have been doing things the traditional way and are still looking at, they're just looking at kicking the can down the road and continuing to do things the traditional way now, but they're trying to set themselves up for the future, but it's a long ways away. But it sounds like the expectations from Microsoft's side are pretty realistic, and that's good.
Yeah, they learned that they need to provide hybrid solutions and that they need to, make sure that the on-prem solutions are also supported for quite a while.
All right. I don't know, Jack, do you have anything else to add or anybody else? Or
I'm in the portal right now. It's 1,422 Microsoft Ignite sessions in the catalog.
That's insane.
Whoa.
That is absolutely incredible. I wonder how many are repeats. How many people are at the show?
23,000.
Aha.
Nice. Wow. How is it there?
Crazy full. Yeah, it's crowded. It's like, masses of people walking back and forth.
Yeah.
And you are walking miles and miles and miles because it's such a huge conference center. And some of the escalators don't work, or they go in the wrong direction, and people are trying to find a way to their session rooms and stuff like that. So it's very interesting. Food sucks. Yeah, it's a typical conference.
Right, and we're well into the week, so the conference scurvy has set in, and you are malnourished now.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining. Tim, I guess I kind of want to plug you guys. Like, Tim is Independence at V trainer / author / consultant. Benny is you're consistently employed, but you're an independent consultant.
I'm independent, yeah, but I have my customers and consistently working for some of my biggest customers. Yeah.
So, well, thank you guys both for joining us here. This was this could not have happened without either of you, so I appreciate that. And I think that's a wrap for us. So thanks everybody for listening, and we'll get this thing posted up to the site pretty quick.